welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. I will be joined by Paul Dottino shortly. He's finishing up filming a segment for Giants First and 10 on MSG. He'll be joining us when he is done. Giants and Cowboys coming away on Sunday. This game, of course, has been flexed back to 1 o'clock. It was originally a 4:25 start, so make sure you note that if you're tuning into the game on TV, radio, or coming to the game as well. And by the way, if you're coming to the game, it is our coat drive day, so bring your gently used or brand new coats or hoodies, and they will be collected at the gates before the game. Obviously, a very busy week here in Giants land, everybody. I have not been on since everything happened on Monday, so I'll kind of give you my spiel here before we get to the Giants and Cowboys. Really quick, Bob Papa tweeted this the other day. I just want to reiterate it on the air. I'm not sure if Paul or Russ or Lance has said it over the last couple of days, but you know, people call here and they get upset that, you know, oh, why aren't you guys saying these guys should get fired and let go? Well, Bob Papa made a great point on Twitter. And, you know, Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese, they've made a lot of money doing what they do. They're going to be fine. But I think people forget about the assistant coaches who do not get rich doing this. They forget about the lower-level staff people in the front office, scouts. There's collateral damage to moves like this. And I think that's why the Maras and the Tishes are very hesitant to do things like this, and they're very patient because there are a lot of people that get affected by moves like this. And obviously, you know, we don't know what the collateral damage is going to be after the season with whatever the Giants do in the front office and coaching staff. But you really feel, of course, for the two guys that get fired. They're good men, Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese. But then you have the lower level people who might have to pick up and move their families, and their whole lives change off of things like this. So I think those people are often kind of forgotten in all this. And remember, people, too, these are guys that sit next to us in the cafeteria, that work down the hall from us. These are people that we know they're our friends. So when people call up and wonder, oh, you know, you guys, you know, you're soft and things like that, just keep in mind these are people that we know and whose lives are going to be really affected by this. So that's why you will never hear anybody on the show ever ask or call for anybody to be fired. That being said, as John Mara stated on Monday, it was time. The team was 2-10. The record simply was not acceptable, according to John Mara. He was embarrassed by the job the team has done this year. And obviously, going out the door, John Mara has a lot of respect for both Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo. He's not going to bash these guys going out the door, and I thought he did a very good job trying to stay positive. But if you go back to some of his interviews he did this year after the press conference, and you go back to even his press conference after you let go of Tom Coughlin, I think you can kind of figure out some of the underlying reasons. When he talked to Mike Francesa, he mentioned some things about the discipline issues, the suspensions of Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Janoris Jenkins. You have the Eli Apple issues going on right now as well. And I think, you know, all those things put together were part of the quote-unquote spiraling out of control that John Mara mentioned as the primary reason for wanting to make changes. And then you go back to also a couple years ago when he addressed the roster when the Giants decided to fire Tom Coughlin. He talked about, and I'll give a couple quotes here, our draft classes were not as productive as we would have hoped. I think that's primarily the cause of why we're standing here today and talking about this. We need to look at where we have missed the boat on some of these things, where we can do better, what we need to change. And then one other thing, your core players are your third, fourth, and fifth-year players. If you look back at these draft classes, there's not a lot of them that are playing right now. So I think when you look at the coach and the general manager, those are the underlying reasons why the changes had to be made the way they were made. Obviously, the team has been struck horribly by injuries, but you go back to how they played when the team was healthy earlier in the year, and I think you're disappointed by that record as well. And since then, obviously, the wide receiver injuries, the offensive line injuries, now the team is just trying to stay afloat. So where you go from here, I'm sure we're going to get those questions. Nobody knows any names. Anyone that claims to is lying to you. Obviously, there are a lot of names out there that are popular that people want to talk about and things of that nature. That's great. But the process is only beginning. And my early opinion, and this is just my opinion, I don't know what the Giants are thinking, I don't see any grand slam no-brainer candidates out there. There's nobody sitting there where you think, boy, this is the hot assistant, this is the guy I have to have, this is the hot personnel guy that I have to have. I think this is going to be a longer process, and I think it can be a longer process now because it's starting so early, 4 weeks before the season's over. I think there are guys without jobs, with jobs that you could talk to after the season's over. For teams that are in the playoffs, you'll have to wait until the third week of January to do that. And I think, as John Mara said, you want to get the general manager in first, and he'll have a chance to help select the head coach. And I think that'll be the first part of this process to try to find that general manager that will assist you in getting the head coach. Ernie Accorsi will be involved, a former Giants general manager. He has assisted a few teams trying to find their candidates and future hires a general manager. I don't think it's necessary you go young. I don't think it's necessary you avoid old. I think there are a lot of different ways you can do it. For the head coach, same deal. I don't think you have to get a guy with experience. I don't think you have to get a coordinator. I don't think you have to avoid a college coach. I think there are a lot of different ways you can go here, and I think a lot of it's going to come down to the interviews. And I'll reference the way the Yankees did their coaching search, where there really wasn't a home run candidate for that either. And they talked to a lot of people, and it was the people that blew you away in the interview. And as John Mara said, when you find the right guy, you go with the right guy. You don't cross people off the list because of preconceived reasons for why they might not be the right person for the job. You interview people, you find the best job, find the best person for the job, and you hire them. So I think that's what's going to be happening over the next 4 or 5 weeks. And it might take some time. Giant fans are going to have to be patient, but that's okay. You want to get the right person, even if it takes a little extra time. So, of course, we'll be taking calls about that the rest of the year. Now for the game. The Giants are playing a football game this weekend, and I think it is very important to ownership that the Giants compete and win some of these games. Three out of the final four are at home against division opponents, the Cowboys this week, then the Eagles, and then, of course, the Redskins in the final game of the year on New Year's Eve. So that is a very important thing for ownership to come out, be competitive, and win these games. Obviously, as John Mara mentioned in his press conference, you're not giving interim head coach Steve Spagnuolo a whole lot to work with because of the injuries. The roster is what it is. They'll do their best. They'll play hard. They'll try to play well. We heard from Steve Spagnuolo the first time he was speaking as interim head coach on Wednesday, and I thought he had a couple interesting things to say. The most important, of course, the fact that Eli Manning will be the Giants' starting quarterback again this week. He didn't come out and say it, but when a reporter asked him, so basically you're playing Eli because he gives you the best chance to win, right? Steve Spagnuolo kind of nodded, smiled, and grinned, said, yeah, I think that summarizes it pretty well. So that's why Eli Manning is going to go out there and start against the Cowboys. You hope Sterling Shepard's available with that hamstring. He sounded pretty frustrated in the locker room yesterday. I believe at one point he said, boy, it's always something this year. Something new keeps coming up, and it's tough. He'll try to play, but wide receivers' hamstrings, you have to be careful with that. Obviously, Justin Pugh will try to make his way back, and boy, how important would that be to have Justin Pugh back on the field at right tackle trying to block DeMarcus Lawrence. Chad Wheeler out there, he'll do his best, but you're going to have to help him a lot. You saw what happened against Khalil Mack last week. Again, this is not Chad Wheeler's fault, folks. He shouldn't be playing. He's an undrafted free agent. These offensive tackles have to develop. I'm not trashing him, but you're going to have to give him assistance. And by the way, coming off a concussion, too. Who knows if Chad Wheeler's going to be ready, in which case Bobby Hart's going to be out there. You need Justin Pugh back. He's working his way back. He's progressing, he said yesterday. Hopefully by the end of the week, he'll be better than questionable on the injury report. Obviously, you don't want to rush him. You rush back from a bad back. What happens? You get put right back on the injured list, just like what happened to Pugh earlier this year. But boy, he would be really, really handy to have on the field this week against the Dallas Cowboys, who have been struggling, folks. And don't let the game last week against the Redskins fool you. A lot of those points and scores came on special teams, a touchdown, and the Redskins also turned it over three times in their own side of the field. And that really helped the Cowboys' offense, which is still struggling. I think partially it's a loss of Ezekiel Elliott, and the way teams are now playing them, Dak Prescott has less room to throw the football. But I also believe, and I think it's been a problem for the Cowboys all year, that Ezekiel Elliott kind of hid. Their wide receivers have trouble getting open. Dez Bryant does not get the separation he used to. Though I think this week against the Giants, it's going to be very important to give some help on that side. Janoris Jenkins in years past has done a phenomenal job on Dez Bryant to the point where he shut him down in a lot of games. Well, Janoris Jenkins got a surgically repaired ankle. He's not playing in this game. So who's going to cover Dez Bryant? Big, big deal. Eli Apple's still banged up with the hip in the back. I would be surprised if he plays right now based on what we've seen at practice. So is it DRC? But then if DRC is playing Dez, then who's covering Cole Beasley in the slot? Is it Ross Cockrell out there? Well, then I think you worry about Dez making some big plays. So I think that's something you have to keep an eye on. Alfred Morris had an excellent game last Thursday. He ran for over 130 yards. And where they like to use him is on those outside stretch plays, something the Giants have struggled with for a good portion of this season because of so many linebacker injuries. B.J. Goodson came back last week. Then he had to leave with an ankle. He did a little bit in practice yesterday, not a ton. You had to put Jonathan Casillas on injured reserve yesterday. So you have another young linebacker, an experienced linebacker with the Giants in the system, coming in to replace him. So I think you worry about Alfred Morris running the football. Combine that with Dez and Cole Beasley, how you match up with them. To me, those are some of the important things for the Giants' defense in this game. And you try to slow the momentum Dak Prescott built in the second half against Washington. He played better after 3 weeks where the Cowboys' offense was non-existent. They didn't score more than 10 points in three straight games. They were legitimately poor. So you want to try to start faster defensively to try to take some of that confidence they might have built a little bit off of that Redskins game. Offensively, I mentioned the offensive line blocking DeMarcus Lawrence. David Irving is another person you have to worry about. A very good interior pass rusher for the Cowboys. Unfortunately for the Giants, Sean Lee will make his way back onto the field this week for the Dallas Cowboys. By far their best defensive player. Frankly, I think a top three player on that team. It is noticeable when he is not on the field how much worse the Cowboys are on defense. They did a couple other things last week, too. They made some substitutions in the secondary. Kayvon Frazier played a little bit more at safety for Byron Jones. He made, I think, seven or eight tackles, did good against the run. They used Jones more in coverage. Chidobe Awuzie was one of their starting cornerbacks. Orlando Scandrick's battling an injury, so you might see more Anthony Brown in the slot, which could be something the Giants could take advantage of after a strong rookie year. Anthony Brown has struggled just a little bit. So things to keep an eye on as the Giants get ready to play the Cowboys at MetLife Stadium. I'm sure a lot of Giant fans will be out there. There'll be a lot of Eli Manning jerseys supporting Eli Manning. But I'll say this, too, after that Giant game against the Chiefs. I know a lot of people are excited. Giants game against the Raiders, excuse me. And they're very excited that Eli's back and, oh, we'll get the offense going again. Here was my major take from last week's game before I get to your calls at 201-939-4513. You might have switched the quarterback, but the offense looked exactly the same. And I think that gets back to kind of what we talked about last week a lot, is that the issues weren't at the quarterback position. The issues was everything happening around the quarterback position, whether the offensive line, receivers having issues getting open outside, the running game not being effective. Go down the list. And a lot of that is injury related. So I don't think you're going to see a huge, huge change. You can't change the offense in a week either. So people are like, oh, Ben McAdoo's not here. Maybe things will be different. Well, you can't change the offense in a week. Mike Sullivan was already calling the plays. He's going to call the plays again. Might just see some different things, slight here or there, sure. But you can't throw the whole kit and caboodle out the window and start scratch in week 13 of the NFL season. It doesn't work that way. Week 14, excuse me. So those are things I think you keep an eye on as you head into the Dallas game. And the Giants hope they go in the turnover battle, score some points, and keep this Cowboys offense under wraps and struggling like it has been for most of the past 4 weeks since Ezekiel Elliott's suspension, which still lasts two more games. He'll be back in week 16. The Cowboys still have a chance to make the playoffs at 6-6. They would have to run the table, though, more likely than not. They're two games behind the Seattle Seahawks, and then they're tied with a few teams, the Falcons, for that, trying to get that final wild card spot. Also two games behind the Panthers. They're right there with the Seahawks for the two wild card spots at 8-4. Cowboys final four games, Giants, Raiders, Seahawks, Eagles. So three games that are winnable but not easy. And then who knows who the Eagles will be playing in that final regular season game. They'll have the bye more than likely wrapped up by then. And perhaps home field throughout. If not, if they're playing for home field, guys might play. So that could change the equation as well. All right, let's do calls. 201-939-4513. Hopefully, Dottino will be here soon. I don't know what he's doing. I'm going to have to give him some you-know-what when he gets here. But let's go to Tony in D.C. Tony, you can be my co-host for now. What's going on, pal?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Tony. What's on your mind today?
Yep, that was a great opening. I hate when people call in, fire this guy, fire that. It's like, come on, people have jobs. Take it easy.
Yep.
But so here's what I wanted to talk to you about. And I wanted to talk to you and the other partner kind of that you're normally with, because you guys are football nerds like I consider myself to be. And so two things. First off, a lot of fans were getting, you know, were tired of hearing that the reason why the offense isn't doing well is because they're not executing. So, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. He played NCAA football for UVA, Giants fan also. And I was like, yeah, we keep hearing this execution stuff. What's going on? And he said, well, what you have to understand is that for an offense to work, everyone has to execute at the same time. And the issue is that the offense, whether it's Eli or Geno, whoever it may be, is that the guys aren't executing at the same time. So if three linemen get it right and two get it wrong, it kills the play.
Oh, yeah.
If the linemen get it
right. Yeah, Tony, one person not doing their job can kill a play.
Exactly. The passer can miss a pass. Everyone can do everything right, and then the receiver drops the ball.
Absolutely.
So it's his opinion. So when people talk about execution, what people that don't play team sports have to realize is you have to execute at the same time. So he was of the opinion that the coaching just wasn't getting these guys on the same page. So we'll see where that goes in the future.
Well, Tony, I think you got to point it at the talent level too. I mean, I'm not going to put this all on the coaches. I don't think that's fair. I mean, is it the coach's fault that because of injuries they have to play Chad Wheeler at right tackle against the best pass rusher on the planet in Khalil Mack? I mean, he's just not good enough to block Khalil Mack. Few people are, but to ask an undrafted free agent to do that is a really, really tough ask. If you look at the offensive line, there's one guy left that was supposed to be starting at the start of the year. One that played last week. There are two starting outside wide receivers. One guy got cut after 2 weeks of the year. The other one was the last wide receiver on the roster. So to me, I think, yeah, you could talk coaching, that's great, and execution, but at some point, your players have to beat and outperform the players across from them. And I think, and I'm not counting the first four games here when the team was healthy, but in the past eight games, when all these injuries have struck, quite frankly, these other teams are more talented because the Giants have had so many injuries at so many positions over the course of the year. Now make your second point.
And I absolutely agree, because of the injuries at this point, we're just too snake bit no matter what we do.
Yep.
And so, but yes, you're right. I was referring to the first four games in last season, which you're absolutely right, for the last, you know, eight games or so. So here's my second point, and I want you to, you know, respond to it with your opinion and ask, you know, Paul when he gets in, and David Deal, because he kind of brought this up. It's about the draft. So I was talking to my friend about the draft, and most people feel like, well, maybe we should trade back and acquire picks. And David Deal was of the opinion of a quarterback. And I was telling my friend, well, you know, David Deal thinks we should get a quarterback. And my friend was saying, that's probably not what he said. What he probably said was that they should draft a franchise quarterback. and then I thought about it. And you know, you know the drafts as well as anyone. We think of how hard it is to get your hands on a franchise quarterback, because anyone can draft a quarterback. You know, that's not the issue.
Correct.
But how much is the Cleveland Browns kicking themselves over Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson? So what I want to say to fans, and I want you to comment on this, we don't know who the GM's going to be, but if the GM feels that there's a franchise quarterback at our, you know, position to pick, I think David Deal is right. If the GM interprets that, we're not trading back. We're going to take what the GM thinks is a franchise quarterback, because it is so hard to get that on your roster.
Yeah, Tony.
Getting a quarterback.
Yeah, Tony,
you know?
Look, Tony, I agree 100%, and thanks a lot for the call. You made some good points. I appreciate it. You're right, and that's the point I've been making since callers, to God, probably going back 4 weeks now, have been asking us about the draft and what the Giants should do. And, you know, some people have been, no, I don't want to draft a quarterback. Some people, I want to draft a quarterback. Here's how I look at it. And until I know who's declaring, I'm not going to be able to give you a firm answer, and I look at all their tape to tell you whether or not I think one of these guys fits the description. But if you believe at two or three or four, wherever the Giants end up picking, it'll probably be in the top three. Right now, based on where strength of schedule is going to land, I think more likely than not it'll be three. But we'll wait and see. We're not going to know that until the end of the season, okay? if your scouts and whoever the Giants general manager is going to be are in unison and have a consensus that the guy that's a quarterback that's available when you select is your next Eli Manning, that he's going to be your quarterback for 10 to 15 years, you select that player. You don't mess around. You don't trade down and hope you get him later. You don't get fancy. You don't get clever. You don't get smart. You pick the guy. That's what you do. Now, if you don't believe that guy's a franchise quarterback, you don't select that player. Then you trade back, and maybe you pick a quarterback later in the draft. Maybe you don't pick a quarterback at all. Because as beneficial it can be to your franchise to pick a franchise quarterback, it might be even more detrimental to select the wrong quarterback. If you pick the wrong guy, go ask the Cleveland Browns, that sets you back for a very long time. Because you have to commit to that guy for 3 to 4 years. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there and you lose half a decade, if not more, because you picked the wrong guy. That's why the evaluation of the quarterbacks is so important. Paul DeTino's back. Get in here, Paulie. It's been 20 minutes. I've been carrying you here. You're killing me.
What can I say, John?
Get the headset on before you start talking, please. How you doing?
Hello, peoples.
Welcome back. How was your First and Ten segment?
We just got done. Had a nice interview with Shane Vereen. Folks, remember First and Ten. Giants First and Ten airs every Friday on MSG.
Oh, you got Vereen this early in the day?
I got Shane Vereen,
nice.
Actually, and he was very good and has a lot of stuff to say about Spags and about the Cowboys defense, and we're looking forward to a good program.
I think that's a good get because you want to get a veteran to kind of address everything that happened this
week.
That's
why I asked for him.
Rather than talking to a young guy. I hate that. And look, it's not the media's fault. It's not the reporter's fault. They talk to who's there. But I always think it's very odd to kind of head into that locker room. And I saw a bunch of people, like, surrounding Andrew Adams and Evan Engram asking about the coach. These young guys, I don't even want to put them – first of all, they don't know enough to answer these questions. They haven't been in the league long enough to have a clue. But more importantly, I don't think it's fair putting those guys in that position.
No, because most of them have probably – at this young stage of their careers, never been through any kind of situation that even resembles this.
Correct.
At least a veteran, even someone like Vereen, who may or may not, obviously when he was with the Patriots, the Belichick was never changed. And with the Giants, you know, he's only gone through one head coaching change from Coughlin to McAdoo, and now this one. But you know he's got a lot of friends around the league. And I'm sure that over the years of his time in the NFL, he's at least talked to people about it.
Right.
And he knows the climate. So you definitely want to go to an older guy. So, that's what I did.
All right. So we took one call. He asked about the draft.
Yeah.
And we had –
Draft? What draft?
Yeah, exactly. And he also talked
Who
about –
Who the next taking, John?
And he also kind of talked about execution in the Giants offense on how, you know, if one or two guys mess up a play, it ruins the whole play. And, you know, he kind of put – he tried to put that on coaching, and I kind of argued that, well, I think it's also a problem. For example, last week you had Chad Wheeler trying to block Khalil Mack. And it's not Chad Wheeler's fault. He should be developing as a backup right now and not having been thrown into the starting lineup against Khalil Mack. But – that's what you have to deal with considering all the injuries the Giants have had. And eventually, Paul, to win these football games, your guy's got to beat the other guy.
You know what?
And if all your guys are hurt and you're playing third, fourth, and fifth string guys, it's going to be hard week to week.
They have to play above the X's and the O's
yep.
and above their capabilities to be able to steal the game. I would say this, though, John. And, folks, I feel comfortable saying this now because the game is a couple of days old. And I'm not looking to pick on anybody in particular. But let's face it. Eli Manning's a 14-year pro. Geno Smith has only been in the league 3-4 years. And, in fact, you know, hasn't even started for his entire career. He's been on the bench a lot of that time. So his experience level is not nearly what Eli's was. So I'm not picking on him when I say this.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I'm going to tell you, okay? The stuff that you as a fan can't see in the stands or on TV.
Pre-snap.
All of that stuff.
Mm-hmm, that's fair.
That's where Geno Smith had his most difficulties on Sunday. You can look at the stat line and the quarterback rating all you want, okay? But that doesn't truly tell the story of how the quarterback did. Now, I will tell you, I can say firsthand, because I did some investigation on this, Geno Smith had a lot of miscues on pre-snap reads, on audibles, on protection schemes. He just wasn't experienced enough in the offense with these players and didn't have the wherewithal to be able to do that. And that's not a knock on him. But that's the difference between a 14-year veteran who's played 210 consecutive games, who has seen everything.
And by the way,
and can make those calls.
I think Geno did a pretty good job last week. I don't think the game was his fault by any means. I thought he played admirably. He stood in there. I thought he did a good job. And I thought, by the way, I want to throw a bouquet his way because I thought he got put in a real bad spot last week.
He was.
No fault of his own.
He was in a horrible
spot. And I thought he handled it really professionally and really well, and I have a lot of respect for him for doing that.
I don't take anything away from the positives that he did. He had a number of really good throws. He had a number of times where he did scramble, and he had a run out of the pocket.
Yep.
He had three runs for 13 yards, but he also moved a lot and was able to get out of some bad spots and just threw the ball away to avoid a sack.
Correct.
That's not to be debated. But the visual grade that you want to put on Geno Smith was better than the invisible grade that you don't see. And that's where Eli Manning's value comes through A-plus virtually every week. Regardless of what you see, it's the invisible grade that you guys don't see. And that's a big part of why Eli Manning's a Hall of Fame quarterback. And I'm tired of having this argument with people who don't understand it.
Let's not go down
anyway,
that road.
Let's go.
Let's go to Ken in New Jersey. He's up next. Hi, Ken.
Hey, fellas. How's it going?
Ken, you got to take us off speakerphone, pal.
I'd rather he gets off the wing of the airplane.
All right. The background's very loud, so make your point quick, okay?
Yeah, no problem. I'm pulling over. I'm a truck driver. That's why the background was loud.
Oh, no worries.
Is that better?
That does sound better. Thank you.
Yep, no problem. I haven't been able to – well, I've been trying to call in for 2 weeks, so bear with me, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
I feel terrible that, you know, that people got fired right before Christmas. It's a terrible thing. I know they have families. I called up before. I told people to calm down with the Ben McAdoo stuff. He's got kids. But I do think that Ben McAdoo – through his head coaching tenure here, thought that Eli Manning was the one who was holding back his offense because he wasn't mobile. And that's why I think ultimately Eli got benched for Geno Smith because he's the most mobile quarterback on the team.
Yeah, and Ken, by the way, just real quick, Mike Francesa did ask John Mara that question when he interviewed him, whether or not he thought Geno's mobility had something to do with, you know, Ben McAdoo wanting to give him a look. And John Mara did say yes, he thought that was part of it. So I think you do have a partial point there. I agree.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that he doesn't respect Eli. I'm just saying that maybe he thought it was holding him back and his job was on the line and he wanted to try to prove to all of us that if he had a mobile quarterback, maybe things would be different. That's fine.
You do understand, though, what I only said about 2 minutes ago, because all of that experience that you put on the bench and all those pre-snap reads and all those calls get lost.
He's not agreeing with it. He's saying he thinks Ben McAdoo did it.
I shed a tear twice in Giants history in the past 32 years I've been alive, and that was when Tom Coughlin had his press conference and when Eli Manning had his. And I shed a tear for them then, and it's because of the class that they have that I thought it was despicable. Now, I didn't buy a billboard on the turnpike, but I'm happy a Giants fan did. Let's just put it that way. Also, I mean, I have a candidate that could run away with either job, but I doubt it's going to happen because of a conflict of interest. But I want Peyton Manning in the building. If we can get him in the building, I don't care what job he takes. Let's just get him in the building.
I would not be surprised if Peyton Manning eventually was a general manager somewhere. I would be surprised if it was here.
You don't think he'll go Elway route and be an owner somewhere?
That's it. Well,
he might do that.
Elway's also a GM now, though, too. Remember that.
Yeah?
He can go to Derek Jeter route. He can buy a team.
We know he's got the money.
it'll be him and Papa John, baby.
Papa John pays good.
Oh, my goodness.
With that said, guys, I mean – it's been a disappointing year, but like you said, John, if Eli Manning was under center last week, I think the game would have went maybe a little bit differently, but we still would have lost. I mean, the offense didn't look much different.
The offense looked exactly the same. The offenses looked the same for the past month and a half because of the people around the quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you said Geno had three runs for 13 yards. Well, Eli had one run for 14 yards and a touchdown this year, so take that. That's all I got, guys.
Thanks, Ken. Have a good one. Appreciate the call.
Oh, my goodness.
That was funny.
Yeah, we're certainly not going to cast Eli in the next version of Dirty Dancing, I'll tell you that. He doesn't have the feet that most quarterbacks in this league have.
201-939-4513. Thanks for the call, Ken. Appreciate you pulling over as well. Do not chat and drive or, you know, text and
drive. Yeah, we can't help you with the ticket.
No, absolutely not. Hey, we haven't heard from Kashawn in a while. She's down in Maryland.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Hi, Kashawn. How are you?
Hello, John. Hello, Paul. How are you
guys
doing?
Hi. Did you fix your phone? I thought it might have been broken.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I work when you guys have the show, so I always have to keep it on the archive.
That's
but I
okay.
took the day off
gotcha.
Today.
Great.
So I have a few things. Number one, I think it was definitely time. And, you know, again, I think certain Giants fans who are calling in, it's like they're afraid to celebrate their emotion, their happy emotion that Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo is gone. Like, yes, nobody wants to be fired, but let's not forget that Giants fans have been talking about the offensive line for years. In fact, I think I haven't felt this excited about the Giants since our last Super Bowl.
And Kashawn, there is nothing wrong for fans to be excited about the team going on a new path and having a new beginning when they're sitting there at 2-10. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And so maybe now we can finally draft a linebacker that we've been screaming for the past 20 years. Maybe now we can finally correctly and accurately fix the offensive line. Maybe now we can finally have a power running game. I mean, I felt McAdoo was trying to turn us into the New York Packers. We're not the New York Packers. We're the New York Giants. So I'm excited. It was long overdue. You know, it was so funny. David Deal and Bob Papa, they did an excellent segment on Sirius XM where they went over Jerry Reese's draft picks since 2009, rounds 1-4. And, I mean, it was just amazing how many misses we've had, which brings me to my question. I hope that John Mara reevaluates the scouting department because, yes, the general manager was let go, but you have to think about the scouts who are reporting to Jerry Reese
well,
to say, hey,
Kashawn,
look
I don't
at
think,
this guy.
I don't think, Kashawn, that'll be John Mara doing that evaluation. I think that'll be whoever the new GM is that does that evaluation.
Okay, yeah, they definitely need to be taking a look, too, because we've had a lot of misses. And so because of that, and I see this as a golden opportunity, and I know you guys are never going to say it. I know the coaches are never going to say it. But as a fan who loves the Giants, not just the players, I love the logo, I don't see any benefit with trying to finish the season 6-10 or 5-11. I do not want to play myself outside of that top three pick because I don't want anything interfering with my possibility to get my guy. And we have a golden opportunity right now to get our next franchise quarterback, Eli Manning. Even though he's our starter, that's great. But the man is going to be 37 years old, and we do need to start looking for. And this is the draft where you can go get your guy. So
Sean,
I just don't see the point of trying to finish 6-10 because you're not going to the playoffs.
I'm going to give you two things here based off of what you said. First of all, you have your next franchise quarterback. I strongly believe Davis Webb is that guy. So don't worry about it, okay? That's number one.
Don't be as confident as Paul, okay? He's very confident. I understand
really?
The other side of it.
I'm very confident in Davis Webb. But number two, regarding what you said earlier, I think just because there's been a change in the hierarchy of the Giants doesn't automatically mean you're going to get all the players that you need to fill the spots. Because remember, like we tried to tell you this past year, it didn't matter if Jerry Reese, Jim Smith, or Dick Tracy was the Giants GM. The bottom line was the draft was barren of true plug-and-play left tackle products.
No, in fairness, Ryan Ramczyk has been an excellent starting offensive tackle this year. Now, there was an injury risk there, but in retrospect, in fairness, Ryan Ramczyk has been an excellent starting offensive tackle.
Didn't that get off to a good start, though? First month or so of the season, it wasn't very good. He's gotten better.
Well, of course, but that's fine.
Okay.
But
now,
even, okay.
now hold on. But, so what I'm saying is, hold on. What I'm saying to you is this. Even with the change in people, that doesn't mean all of a sudden the shelf is full of all the things the Giants need to purchase
That's
or
fair.
Draft.
Absolutely.
That's
fair.
All I'm saying to you. So don't think that all of a sudden there's going to be a ton of offensive linemen available. You and I both know the Giants need help there. But if there's nothing on the shelf, then it doesn't matter if John's the GM. They're not going to get it.
Well, thank God I'm not that.
And that's fair enough. But I just even and my concern was if the Giants had kept Jerry Reese, that even if we were staring at the number two, number three pick, would he pick the right guy? So now that's no longer an issue. And this is why I think and I hope that John Mara will take his time and find the next guy. And I'm nervous. I think we need a new, fresh eyes, set of eyes on the whole thing. I mean, I know he's probably going to be more inclined to hire giant people, quote-unquote giant people, but sometimes, you know, the league has changed, and I think you got to get a guy in here who might have a little bit of old-school mentality, but at the same time understands that how the league is changing and be able to navigate and select players based on the new NFL. And so that's all I got to say, guys, but thank you for taking my call, and I just hope they take their time and they hire the right guy, like a Josh McDaniels for a coach, and just turn this team around because I am sick of losing. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Kashawn.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear from you again.
And trust me, I totally understand as a fan where you're coming from, where you want to secure that top three pick. I get it. And from a completely, you know, outside position looking in, I think that too. However, if you're an owner of the team, if you're a coach of the team, if you're a player of the team, and as an owner, you have responsibility to your paying customers that come to your games to try to get them to watch a victory every Sunday they pay for a ticket. As a player, you're playing for your next contract. You're playing for your professional career. You're going to try your best to win.
Coaches,
period. And the coaches are going to do everything they can because guess what? With a new head coach next year, none of these assistant coaches know where they're going to be or what's going to happen. So they need to coach their rear ends off to try to prove that, look, I deserve to have a job somewhere next year, whether it's here or somewhere else. So all these guys, from the top of the organization to the bottom, are going to try to win football games, even if in the end it costs them a draft pick. And that might be frustrating from the outside, but that's not how professional work. That's not how professional sports works from the team and player and coaching level.
You know, John, for everybody who says that, first of all, this is not the NBA, where truly one franchise guy can make the difference. Where if you tank as an NBA team and you only have 12 people on your active roster, okay? Well, yeah, guess what? There's a seven-man rotation. You get that superstar franchise player, it can make a difference, a la Tim Duncan. Thank you, Spurs, for tanking many years ago.
And there's only two rounds in the NBA draft, and there's usually only a handful of truly impact players in any given NBA draft. While in the NFL draft, you're looking at a couple dozen usually players that end up being Pro Bowl caliber players.
So as a Knicks fan, and I'm self-admitted Knicks fan, I absolutely did feel for the only time in my entire life, the last few years, better they lose, get the better pick, and as a Knicks fan, it helps in that scenario. I understood.
And if you follow me on Twitter, you know I understand as well.
Okay. However, in the NFL, I don't buy it one bit. And I would also tell you,
that's a really good point, Paul. I think that's a really important point.
53 players.
It's a very important point. It's a good point.
53 players per team. One guy is not going to affect your place in the standings that much like it will in the NBA. Now, on top of that, if you were here every day and got to see how many hours and these players put in, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the guys who are in the trainer's room nonstop trying to get taped up, trying to put ice on themselves, trying to get heat compressed just to go out and practice. Why would you put your body through that physical abuse? And why would you, as a coaching staff, do what you do 14 hours a day to go out and lose a game? Why would you do that? Just get out. Just get out. Don't even try. Just get out of the business entirely and go into professional wrestling or something else, because there's no point in even going out there on Sunday after you've put that much work in during the course of the week. So anybody who wants to tank in the NFL, just go away. I'm not talking to you.
David in North Carolina. He's up next. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing good. I hate to keep rehashing. Sunday against the Cowboys, and that should be the news. But I haven't got the call in a while either, like the last couple of callers
mentioned.
That's okay.
Go ahead, David. It's fine.
And I look at the, what happened with Eli, and obviously, like a lot of people, disappointed with the way it was handled. But, I'd kind of come to terms already that, not that I want to move on from Eli, but that I was okay with it. And the reason I say that is just based off I don't see how you fix the offensive problems in one offseason. I mean, it's the NFL. It could happen. I'm not saying it can't. But, you know, I see a quarterback, and let me just say this. I don't care if Eli Manning's a Hall of Fame quarterback, a top 10, top 3 quarterback. Here's what I know about Eli Manning is that he can get it done, and he's a franchise quarterback. And when you grew up in the late 80s and early 90s and had to go through Cannell, Brown, and,
Kent Graham, Tommy Maddox.
I'll take Eli Manning every day, all day. But – at the same time, you gotta look at it. And when you're looking at one of the highest paid guys on your teams, I do feel like Eli maybe the beating he's taken over the last few years. Maybe hears the footsteps. Maybe sometimes holds the ball too long, and then he's kind of got that Kurt Warner syndrome that caused Warner to kind of get pushed out in St. Louis, where if you hit him. The ball's coming out, and so
hold on. Warner did have a broken thumb, and that's part of what happened with his fumble problems with the Rams. He had an injured thumb, and I don't know if it ever really quite healed right. You'd have to ask Kurt yourself about that, but that was a little bit of a different circumstance because injury was a factor. Please don't disregard that.
You've seen Eli acknowledge the problem because that's he wouldn't say it, but. That's why he's wearing the glove this year. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, he's wearing the glove anyway, because they're thinking that it may give him a better grip on the ball. There's no question that, hey,
yeah.
And I'll be honest with you. You know who the Giants franchise leader was in fumbles before Eli? Any idea?
That's a good one, man. I don't
Phil
know.
Phil Sims.
Yeah.
Because usually the quarterback is going to be the guy because he gets hit the most from the blind side.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm just saying.
Well, the reason I make the point, and I agree, I mean, listen, I'm not saying like you said, you get hit from the blind side, I'm not going to hold on to the ball either. But my point is, if the line is going to take a while to get fixed and we do have to move on from Eli Manning, God forbid, I understand it. I'm ready for it because even though, to your point you made with Geno not being able to make the reads, some mobility there can help mask some things. Now, having said that, if the horrible way that the Eli benching was handled helped Jerry Reese move on to maybe greener pastures for him and definitely for us, then I think it was worth it, and here's why. When you do have an Eli Manning and you're committed to him for several more years like we were, I don't want to hear the excuses of, well, there wasn't a lot out there, and there wasn't a lot to choose from. Listen, you make it. Nobody should know Eli Manning, his limitations, his abilities better than Jerry Reese and the people in the house. And if you're seeing something that says, hey, we've got to get this guy an offensive line, and I know he tried with David Boss and Jeff Schwartz. I know he did try. But it got to a point the last couple of years, he was going to live and die with Eric Flowers and some of these guys. And dadgummit, if you didn't like it, tough. And so there could have been things that could have been done, and there could have been changes that could have been made, because as bad as this offensive line was, it did get a tiny bit better when some pieces moved around. And they were so reluctant early on in the season, we maybe could have won a few games early on if somebody would have said, hey, let's change it up a little bit. Let's throw Pugh over here at right tackle and see if that helps when Bobby – Hart was getting beat continually, and nobody would change it up. And whether that falls on McAdoo or a little bit of Reese or both, you know, to me, there was just a stubbornness that got into this organization, even with the way he drafted. Listen, I love taking the first or the best player available in the first round, maybe even the second round. But after a while, you got to start drafting some need. You got to start plugging some holes. You can't always just take the best player available and load up on this position and load up on that position. Sometimes you got to fill some holes, and you can't always do that in free agency. And I got so sick and tired of, well, we just picked the best player available. I mean, we're going to go up there and hand the card in to the best player available. No, we need this. We need that. And in the later rounds, that's when you should do so. So,
David, how long have you been watching the show?
Long time.
All right. You don't need to preach to me about the trenches of the offensive line. I've been singing that song for about 6 years now.
So I hear you, and I don't think there's any question. Every February, March, and April, when I would sit in here with John or Lance or whoever I was sitting in with, and I would say, the Giants need to do this. They need to draft two offensive linemen in the top three rounds. They need to draft this guy with the first-round pick, whoever it was. I mean, I understand what you're getting at. It is a valid opinion. No one is going to argue with you on that, okay? But the problem is, now you have the roster they have.
Thank you, David. We got to run, by the way. Appreciate it.
Now you have the roster they have, and rehashing everything that was or was not done in the last 5 or 6 years is not going to help you moving forward in 2018. You now have to figure out whoever these people are, the coach, the GM, personnel and scouting, if they're going to stay or if they're going to flip them a little bit. They need to figure out going forward, what do you do from here with what you have? Rehashing the last 5 years is not going to help anybody. I mean, John, that's just common sense. Common sense. It's just not going to help. Where do you go from here? And David, if you want to draft two offensive linemen in the first three picks this year, hallelujah. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm not going to fight you on that. Heck, I'm telling you, I want to trade the first-round draft pick to get more picks so I can get more beef. I'm all for it.
You good?
I'm good.
Marco in Connecticut. He's up next. Hi, Marco.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, hi. Marco. What's up, pal?
So one big problem I have with people, the way they're commenting about Reese and the offensive line, is when they start talking about the neglect. And I don't see that. I truly don't see that. I mean, if you want to say that he's neglected the linebacker position, that might have been a philosophical change that the Giants have kind of bought into for some years. And I know Lance, when we were talking about the draft, he would comment on the last first-round pick that's been a linebacker whenever we were rumored or mock drafting was happening. But and it's an unpopular thing, I think, when you're talking about Reese, to defend him about the line. But I'll do it because I was actually on board. I'm a fan who was on board with what they wanted to do this year with the offensive line because I thought.
Mm-hmm. So was
I. Roll the dice. Let's roll the dice on these guys that are now a year or two older. And Flowers, his young age, but maybe his experience now playing, was going to benefit him. They did not look the other way at the offensive line. They drafted Flowers. They drafted Richburg. They drafted Pugh. And they played these guys.
No, Marco, you're right. You're right. They did not neglect the offensive line. But
they just
the players
didn't do enough.
That they acquired to play the offensive line weren't good enough.
Understood. Maybe the wrong players there. But
correct.
That's a better way to
it's
put it.
It's a semantics thing. Marco, it's a semantics thing. Again, I've never said they neglected the line either. But they threw free agent money at David Boss and Jeff Schwartz, and that did not work out very well.
Yeah.
Okay? They brought in a journeyman in Marshall Newhouse, and he was just a stopgap who was here for a
Marshall
short period of time.
Marshall Newhouse is a good swing tackle. That's what he is.
And that's all he was, but then he was forced to become a starter here.
Correct.
Because they had issues. So here's the thing. They made some bad decisions, and they also didn't fortify enough. Okay? It's like if you're trying to start a campfire, okay, and you use one log and one matchstick. Well, I tried to do it, but if you had three logs and a big electronic flamethrower, now you're gonna start that fire.
See, to me, I think the problem here is that teams get successful in the offensive line by finding centers and guards in the third and fourth round. Have the Giants found one starting center or guard in the third or fourth round over the past 10 years? The answer is no.
I don't think.
And I'm talking off the wall now. I don't think in any of these drafts when they drafted Pugh, they drafted
Beattie,
and
all
those guys.
Here. What's your question?
How many times in the last 6 years did the Giants take two offensive linemen in one draft?
Well, I know the year they drafted McCants. And Mosley, I believe that was the same draft,
and
right?
We're talking, what, 6 and 7?
Pugh and Eric Herman in 2013.
Okay, Eric Herman did not
Mosley
work out
and
very
McCants
well.
In 12. But again, Herman's a sixth-round pick.
Right.
And
Flowers,
McCants is a sixth-round
Flowers
pick. And Flowers and Bobby Hart would
Bobby
be the
Hart
one,
the
right?
very, again, seventh round.
Yeah, but you didn't get, like, you didn't get a day one and two selection of that at that position.
We call them in football premium picks.
Correct.
In rounds 1, 2, or 3. Those are premium picks. Even the fourth round is considered somewhat of a blue chip round. Well, they didn't take in any draft of those years two linemen in the top four rounds, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
That's the issue.
And in fact, they didn't take the only offensive lineman they took in rounds three or four since Jerry Reese has been the general manager is James Brewer. The only offensive lineman they took in rounds three or four. So that'll tell you what you need to know.
That would be my fair and logical assessment of where they missed. Okay? As opposed to just saying they neglected. It was the degree to which they addressed it that I think was short.
Okay. That's fair. I have a question about the GM search, but
sure.
I've always wondered this though about the the name is escaping me, but the left tackle that went to the Rams that everyone made a big deal about. What's his name?
Oh, Whitworth.
Right.
Whitworth. So when we get into conversations even on the show and we start talking about certain money that a free agent left tackle would be asking about and at his age, right? And then we also say, "Whoa, hey, Giants fans, but would you want to sign JPP? And did you like, what about money down the road for Beckham and Collins?"
Yep.
And that's great for conversation, but I do wonder about that. And I get it maybe from a strategic point of view that the GM is not going to address people and say, "Hey, guys, listen, we have to develop our offensive line through the draft. We're not going to allocate our money on a 35-year-old left tackle because down the road we have a franchise safety and a franchise wide receiver we have to pay." Do you think that's conversations that happen, or do you just think Whitworth, they really missed on a Whitworth?
No, those conversations happen. Teams have their salary cap numbers on a board somewhere. I would imagine here would be in Kevin Abrams' office.
Yes.
Where they have money allocated for each player for every year in some type of flow chart. And they know, look, we need to have X dollars for this player, X dollars for that player. So, yeah, that's something that these teams track, Marco. And they know that, look, I can't invest in a player this year because I'm going to need the money next year. And, you know, if this guy's a long-term contract. Now, could they have figured out a way to sign Andre Whitworth? Yes. Would it have limited them elsewhere? Sure it would have. So, look, there's a give and take everywhere, the same way I mentioned before. Yeah, they could have taken Ryan Ramczyk in the first round, but it was a legitimate risk. The guy hadn't done anything in the combine process.
Yeah.
He barely played in the preseason because of his knee injury. So there were all sorts of issues to kind of sort through there. All right, real quick, I want to get the other calls, Marco. What's your GM search question?
Yeah, thanks, John. Okay. So the model here with the Giants has been to hire the GM, and then they will hire the coach. And John Mara said that the other day.
Yes.
Ideally. In recent years, if you pay attention to teams like Kansas City, Buffalo, Seattle, San Francisco, they've done it opposite. They've hired the coach, and they've allowed the coach to kind of match up with a GM that the coach has been comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if you guys could talk about why one model works maybe versus the other, and why this new
Good
age
question.
Model, because these other teams have been, Seattle's been very successful. San Francisco, right now, they're young. Shanahan and Lynch, it's a kumbaya thing, man. They're looking really good. So curiosity, because a lot of people have said, hey, the Giants, maybe they want to look at the way they've used this old school model and maybe make a change.
Thank you, Marco.
So I'll hang up.
Appreciate the call. To me, you do it the other way if you have the Grand Slam coach. Like when the Seahawks went to go hire Pete Carroll, he was so successful at USC. He had run the entire program at USC that – yeah, you want to make sure you get Pete Carroll. If you're
he
the Chiefs,
also ran away from the problems he left behind.
I don't know what you're talking about. For the Chiefs, Andy Reid, he was a home run.
Right.
He's a 10-year coach that made the playoffs and won the division like six or seven straight years with Donovan McNabb. So you get Andy Reid there. That's the priority. And then you can find a GM after that because Andy Reid's the foundation of your program. And he's the foundation of that program. Pete Carroll's the foundation of the Seahawks program. Now, I think the Niners is a little bit different because Kyle Shanahan was just an assistant coach before. So I think that's a fairly unique circumstance. But I think that's when you do it the opposite. When you have that, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen. Let's say the Giants hire Nick Saban. He would be the centerpiece of the program. not the general manager.
A personality of that stature with that kind of resume and reputation, you're definitely going to make him the first of the two hires if that's the guy.
John Harbaugh, Bill Cowher, John Gruden.
Right.
Go down
right.
the list.
Right.
Now, I don't think one of those guys is going to wind up with the Giants. That's my opinion. I don't know. Who the heck knows? We'll find out.
Right.
But that's when you make the coach the first guy.
Yeah. It's based on individual circumstances.
Right.
There's no right or wrong answer across the board on this
no.
at all. And I do agree with what John said. It has to do with the stature of the guy that you're talking about. Just one note in reference to your Rip Whitworth comment. According to the NFLPA, and I can quote them because they have the official numbers that they put out on the website.
Correct.
The Giants have just over $1 million remaining on their salary cap this year. So if you would sign, for example, a Whitworth at $15 million.
What was it, 12 or 15? I thought it was 3 for $36 million.
I thought he got 15 this year, though.
Oh, you might be right about
that. The way it was
okay.
broken up.
You might be right about that.
I mean, you know, again, the exorbitant fee for a guy of that age. And still, there's another month left in the season. There's no guarantee he would have made it through the whole season anyway. He still might not. The price that he was asking and what it would have done to your salary cap number, it would have involved tearing up so many other wooden boards to fit him under the cap. I don't know that the Giants would be any better off.
And by the way, I want to bring this up too, because we talked about, I mentioned Ryan Ramczyk before, and yeah, he's played really well this year. He's also been playing right tackle for the Saints.
Yes.
Not left tackle.
Yes.
That's something I should have brought up earlier.
Yes.
Jay in Brooklyn, he's up next. Hi, Jay.
The Giants could use help at right tackle.
Yeah, how you guys doing, man?
That's absolutely true.
So I let you
no,
go with that.
No, that's fair. You're right.
I let you go with that.
What's up, Jay? How are you?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, real quick, just a couple of things. Lost in all this stuff, in the chaotic way they handled it, and I think some of the fan and media overreaction, is the fact that at the beginning
that's
of this, there was a nugget of a good idea to start transitioning away from Eli Manning.
Sure there was. And, Jay, here's the thing. If they would have said, Eli, we're going to start you, we're going to play you, and if the game's out of hand – or if the offense is doing really poorly, there's a chance we might work somebody into the game in the second half or late in these contests. I don't think you would have had a controversy at all.
I agree, and I think going and I didn't. There was a couple of things I didn't agree with Marrow what he said. One of the things was he said he didn't think it would be a big deal whether they went to Geno Smith or Davis Webb. I think that's nonsense. I think if they went to Davis Webb instead of Geno Smith, it would have been a much better reaction to the situation.
I agree with that. I think that's fair. From fans, at least. From fans.
Wait.
Maybe not from Eli, but from fans.
From fans. From
yes.
fans, from the media, from people. Listen, Paul, you like to talk about facts, right? You like to state facts.
Yes.
This is a fact that you can't deny. And it's been reported by a lot of people who follow the Giants, beat reporters, and national reporters.
Just because it's in the papers doesn't mean it's true. Please remember that.
No, but I'm going to tell you why it's true. Because the decision to bench Manning was made by Mara and the organization as a whole. That tells you that there are people in that organization, whether you agree with it or not, who think it's time to move on.
Well, Jay, I want to correct one thing for you. It was not an organizational decision to bench Eli
correct.
Manning.
No. It was to start. What I mean is to get the younger. He said in his press conference, "I want to see what the younger guys have."
It was an organizational decision to want to look at the other two quarterbacks.
Correct.
That's true. Yes,
work them in.
Correct.
I think is the appropriate
correct.
Phrase.
Correct. Yes, and that's
correct.
Absolutely correct.
So please throw that word bench out because that's inaccurate, and we're not going to tolerate inaccuracies here.
Well, I mean, they benched him. It doesn't matter what they said. That's
No,
you are wrong.
Eli Manning chose to be benched after they told him he would not play in the second half of games. That's
right,
what happened.
I mean, let's be real, guys. That was one of the worst ideas I've ever imagined. You're going to tell a
well, that's a different
guy,
story.
You're going to play you a half, whether you're winning or losing.
Hey, no argument.
No
argument.
No argument. No one will fight you on that. But do not say that John Mara or the organization benched Eli Manning. That is a factually inaccurate statement.
I mean, I know it's a sore subject with the organization with that.
With me because I deal in facts.
I mean, okay, if you say so, Paul. I mean, another fact is this. How are you going to give a new GM the keys to the car with a number 5 pick and tell him that you have the quarterback on your future, your roster, but you haven't seen him play one snap?
No, Jay, I think what they'll do, they'll tell the general manager, evaluate Davis Webb, and you make your decision. John Mara is not going to tell the new general manager that Davis Webb's your franchise quarterback no matter what. That will be the decision of the new general manager, and frankly, it should be the decision of the new general manager.
See,
right, there's no guarantee that guy that comes in likes Davis Webb.
Of course not.
No doubt. And this is why if you saw Russ and I yesterday, what I said is that John Mara, who has indicated that there would be a benefit to hiring the GM before the season is over, okay, I understand why he said that. Because you know what? If that GM gets here in the next week or two, if it should happen that way, he gets the opportunity to then maybe be with Davis Webb on a regular basis at practice every day for the final 2 or 3 weeks of the season. Maybe he even gets to watch him in a game.
Jay, we got to go. Appreciate the call, buddy. We got to run.
I would hire that GM as soon as possible, John, to be honest, for that very reason.
Yeah, but you want to get the right
– you want the right guy.
Right, exactly.
You want the right guy.
And if you think the right guy has a job right now, you can't do it.
But if you can get the right guy now,
sure,
get him in here now.
I'm with you.
Because he will get a taste of what Davis Webb is, and that will be all the more better for your organization.
I'm looking at your Twitter feed. Is it true that LeVar Ball has put his name in the thing for the Giants general manager spot? No, I'm just kidding.
No,
don't freak out.
I just wanted to see the look on his face.
He has signed with an agent, though.
Who cares?
How about that?
I don't care. Let's go to Will in the Bronx. Will, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, John?
What's
up?
Hello. How are you?
Okay, I'm just going to cut straight to the point here.
Go right for it.
I think that even though this is a passing league and we need to focus on quarterbacks and pass receivers to get offenses going, I think that we still need to balance teams out even in this age. Where we can get a power game.
And, Will, I think the whole league's swinging that way. You've seen it with a lot of teams now. Run the ball first. Look at the Saints. Look at the Cowboys. Even the Patriots make sure they run the football. The Steelers. All the better teams in the league now, the Vikings, they all run the football. So I think we all agree with you on that.
Yep.
Yes, yes. And
took long enough for the league to listen to me, I might add. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. Concerning Davis Webb, I think that if I'm not correct here, he shouldn't even been a line in the conversation this year. It was supposed to be Eli and Geno in an emergency situation.
Yes, that's correct.
Davis Webb was not designed to do anything this year, so I don't really agree with the organization wanting to even take a look at him this year.
I disagree.
That's something that could have did next year. And then maybe the year after that, get him prepped
you have to make decisions this offseason that now get affected by what Davis Webb can do. So I understand wanting to get a look at it.
You see, Will, what happened was the reason the Giants signed Geno Smith in the first place was because they thought they had a Super Bowl contender. They thought it would be unfair for a rookie such as Davis Webb to have to be the number two quarterback on a team that may have to call on him. Remember, the backup is one snap away. And if you're a Super Bowl contender, they felt it was a risk that Davis may have to be the number two. So when they drafted him, the idea, Ben McAdoo told us, I prefer my rookie quarterback to be the number three, sit down for a year, and not do anything. And that was the idea. So they signed Geno, and Josh Johnson came back because they wanted to have a veteran to back up Eli in case this Super Bowl-bound team needed some snaps from a veteran. That's why Geno was brought in, for no other reason.
Right.
What's your second point, Will?
That's why Davis Webb shouldn't really have had any significance in terms of playtime this season.
Yeah, but the season changed. The circumstances have changed. The season is now effectively over in terms of playoff hopes.
Right.
So if you're going to have to make a decision on a quarterback in April, you want as much information as possible to make an educated decision. What's your second point, Will? We're late here.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So the second point was I was taking a look at some of the players that may be coming out in the draft, and I'm looking at a running back. Just to go back to my point of balancing out the offense,
uh-huh.
I don't think we necessarily need to look at a quarterback this year. I think if we get a running back like Saquon Barkley, somebody that's dynamic, got that that elite speed and strength and what have you, kind of like a Elliott-type player. I think we'll be okay with that, and we can look forward to Davis Webb in another 2 years after Eli retires.
Thank you, Will. Appreciate the call, man. We got to run. We're way past. I'm not in favor of drafting a running back extremely high unless you have a team that's ready to accept him where he excels, like the Cowboys were with Elliott with that great offensive line. I don't think the Giants are in that position yet to make that sort of commitment to a running back based on how their roster is structured.
I concur.
And I love Saquon Barkley. Don't get me wrong. I think he's going to be a hell of a player. But I think it's
very dynamic.
Difficult to do that in the top three. Top 15, 20 maybe, but top three is rough.
That's why I'm trading down in the top 10.
Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, you got to be quick for me today, buddy.
Yeah, I'll be real quick. Hallelujah. Thank God the McAdoo-Jerry Reese era is over. Finally, we might be able to get a linebacker. So we might actually get an offensive line, real tackles. And I have to say, I said on Friday, I said I can't in good conscience call BBK again until these two people were fired.
He said it. I swear to God, he said it.
So
really?
I
was so happy. I thought I'd never hear from him.
And that was the final straw that broke the camel's back. You know, Charlie's not going to call BBK anymore. That cannot happen. So he fired him on Monday.
Wow.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys. Take
it easy. He did say that on Friday, and I threw like a mini party because I thought I wouldn't have to hear from him for 4 weeks. And then Monday came.
Wow.
How about that?
Charlie, I hope you enjoy the game Sunday. That's all I got to say.
And lobsters will be coming soon. Lobsters will be coming soon. We like that.
Let's move on.
All right. Everybody, great job on the phones. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Datino. It'll be me and Lancelot Meadow tomorrow taking more of your calls. And I had a bet with my producer before the show how long it would take before we had a Giants-Cowboys call. And he said never, and he was correct. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a good one.